What is up? What is good? How you living? How you feeling? How you doing? I am with a story that lets you know that anything is fucking possible. Imagine going to Grand Valley State, getting drafted in the fifth round, coming immediately into the league and saying, I have arrived. Dominating, punching people in the mouth, sacking your favorite quarterback, and then going, oh, Bill Belichick would like to sign you to a long-term contract. That's what we got going on right now. Matthew Judon in the building. How you living? How you feeling, bro?
Let's get it. Yes, sir, man. Hey, I'll be repping the GB proudly. So thanks for putting that in the intro, man.
Can we talk about so Grand Valley State? I just want to know, high school to college, how did you end up there? How was that the place?
Yeah, man, you know, the college coaches was tripping. And so I didn't have that many sacks. I didn't have that many sacks in high school. I think I had like 5 sacks my senior year. And I didn't get recruited heavily. Mm. And so off that, you know, Grand Valley, they reached out. I didn't have no D1 offers. So, you know, it was like, you know, like I'm in the backyard from 4 different D1 colleges in Michigan. I went to West Bloomfield. And so Michigan is like 30 minutes away. Michigan State is like 35 minutes away. Eastern, Western.
Nobody called.
Nobody called.
Were you a late grower? Like, did you have a growth spurt late, or what happened, do you think?
Nah, I was, you know, I grew an inch in college. I was 6'3 to 6'4. You know, when I graduated, I was probably 6'2.
Yeah.
And then grew 2 inches, but it wasn't like nothing like major. Right. And then, you know, I always had a frame, I had long arms, I was athletic, I was fast. Well, I like to think I was fast, but I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm gonna have to go back and ask all them coaches for real. I'm gonna have to, you know, get that right with them coaches because I was right there. I was right there, and I came out with Will Golston. He just won the Super Bowl with Tampa Bay, and we was in the same class of 10. Mm. And I went to Grand Valley.
And then you go to Grand Valley, have a ton of success, and then still we get doubted again. Now we're going to the fifth round. You go to the Ravens. They drafted 2 other pass rushers in front of you. I know you met with the Patriots privately before that draft, mm-hmm. and I'm sure you were getting told, hey, if you're available, we're going to take you. Hey, if you're available, we're going to take you. Second, third, fourth, fifth round. At that point, were you like, I got an opportunity, or were you like, oh, these motherfuckers are doubting me again?
I was mad. I was pissed off, honestly. And it's not because I don't care. Like, you know, I'm a hater and I'm like, oh, I'm just better than everybody. I'm like, you know, like, what else could I do? I couldn't go to a major school, you know, because nobody, you know, I sent my transcripts and my resumes. I did all I could.
Oh, you were trying to transfer while at Grand Valley?
Well, you know, so it was my second year. So I redshirted and then I played my redshirt freshman year. Then I had the opportunity to transfer to Clemson. And I was like, man, I don't know. It would have been crazy. It would have been crazy. And I could have played right away because if you transfer up, you can play. Jeez. And then I just decided to stay at Grand Valley. I can say I was a little scared, but I wasn't scared of the competition. I was scared of the unknown. You know, my whole family
is there, and they bury you in the back. You know what I mean? Like, you're getting time at Grand Valley. You don't know if they're going to play you at Clemson.
And then at that time, like, all the ends, all the pass rushers was coming out of Clemson. Mm. And so I talked to a couple coaches there.
Oh, so this is like Vic Beasley and stuff, or is this before that?
No, this was like after that. Like he was still there.
Yeah, they were putting guys in the league.
And so I had that opportunity. but I didn't jump on it. But then fast forward to the draft, you know, and I'm looking and I'm like, all right, I had a draft party on the first night, you know, and I'm like, and I tell everybody, like, I'm going to have a draft party right now because I'm not stressed out. Cause I'm not going first round. Yeah. I'm not going first round. So like, I don't have to like worry about my phone. We can like really enjoy it and, you know, all my people around. And then so when I actually do get the call, you know, I just want it private, you know, my girlfriend at the time and my daughter, they was with me. My high school coach was with me, and then just my family. I got 9 brothers and sisters. So we was just all packed in the house. And so
where are you in the 9 brothers and sisters?
I'm the 6th.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm the 6th.
You're on the back.
So we were packed in the house and we was all just chilling. And you know, the day of the second and third round, I get a couple calls from a couple teams, like, you know, just making sure this is your number. And make sure you're around your phone and
what
stuff.
What a tease.
Huh?
What a tease.
Man.
Oh, my God. Leave me alone. You know this is my number. What are you checking for?
That's what I'm saying.
Hit my card and not call me, bro.
That's what I'm saying. So that, like, and so, you know, I'm telling Brienne, which is my wife now, but she was my girlfriend at the time. I'm telling, like, yeah, like, I'm happy. I'm happy as heck. Like, man, we might go second round. That'd be crazy. That'd be crazy. Second or third round, second day guy, man. Like, we'll be set up. And then, bro, I watched the second and third round, like, my phone on my lap.
That's a 6-hour night.
Bro, and then, like, after that, like, you know, you just keep seeing player after player after player, and you're like, bro. Stop it.
Because I know you went to like East West Shrine. Are these players that you had competed against, seen on TV, worked out with? Because that's what I'm always fascinated by is like, if you've seen a dude on the field and you know you're better than them, that's when it stings.
That's what it is. And the knock on me, I had torn my ACL in college. And so, you know, I didn't go to like the big doctors, and then I didn't go to the big school. So that was the knock. It was like, well, we don't know if he's going to stay healthy or, you know, we don't know if he can compete against his competition. So that's why I was like, but the crazy thing is at the combine, like all my numbers was top 5.
Yeah, they were. I was just looking at it. 40, everything.
All my numbers. And I ran slower than I ever would have because I had surgery.
Wow.
2 months before we was running. And like a month and a half before we ran, I wasn't even walking. But I went to the combine and I had to run. And then, you know, I put up bench press. I put 30 up. Then the shut, then all that other stuff. And then it's crazy because you know what you can do. So, I mean, as long as I'm confident in myself. My mama would never, she always told me, like, don't tell me what somebody else can do. Tell me what you can do. Because I'll come home, I'll be like, man, we got this dude on our basketball team. He cold, like, he can use his left hand. This one, we was young. She's like, don't tell me what he can do. Tell me what you can do. And I was like, all right, like, I'm just saying he good at basketball. But like, she'll get real mad. And so, like, I just knew what I could do or help teams. And then I was so happy when I got the call, but I was so ready to work that, you know, like, all my family and stuff, they jumping and yelling around. And I was just like, man, let's get to work.
So you go to mini camp, training camp, and you go to a Ravens team that has T Suggs, Doomerville on the roster, a freak of nature like Brandon Williams in the middle, which I'm sure you had never played alongside before. And so I'm sure you called your mom and you were like, these guys, what? And she was like, focus on yourself. But like to go into a locker room with some guys with so many numbers in the league and so much accomplished, what was your first impression of that?
Honestly, my first impression was Steve Smith. All those dudes you just named, first impression, you come in the locker room, Steve Smith talking to.
Wide receiver.
Yeah, wide receiver. Steve Smith's talking to all the rookies. He don't care if you're a first-round draft pick or the last man that got signed. And he, I don't know how he did it. I still don't know these numbers. But Steve Smith was like, and every draft is – I'm just making up numbers, but he's like, every draft is 362 people drafted, then it's 400 other people signed, and then it's this many people. And I didn't have my job for 15 years. You got to come in and make plays every day. And we were young. We like, man, Steve, ain't nobody trying to hear that shit. Like, damn, we just got here. You trying to get us in, out the league already. And so, but like Steve was, he was just like, in part, the way he was doing it, we didn't want to hear it, but he was just laying wisdom on us. And then I also came in the locker room with Ben Watson. Mm. Ben Watson was there too.
What a leader he is.
Yeah. And Sis wasn't there yet. Sis and Doom wasn't there yet. Because I believe both of them got injured. And gotcha. So both the year before I was drafted, so both of them was away. You know,
Duvall had that fax thing too, which was crazy.
And so they was getting healthy on their own. And so when all the rookies came in, they wasn't there yet. And so we was doing our thing, and you know, we drafted KC out of Boise.
Correa and Kafusi.
Yeah, and then so they put him against Ronnie all the time because that was our first and second draft pick. Yeah. And so they was going against each other all the time. And then it's like, it's so much stuff. It's like, all right, learn the playbook, do this, do that, do this, fine. And it's like crazy because you leave your mom's house and go to college, and they're like, all right, here's the house, and here's where everything is. This is only, you know, a mile walk away from the campus. This is where everybody usually live. And then you get to the NFL, they're like, bro, you don't got a car? Or like, find your own housing. Yeah. And they're like, we can help you find housing, but you might not want that housing and stuff. And so then you...
And by the way, learn this by tomorrow while you're also looking for a
house. Hey, learn it by tomorrow. And then you gotta figure out if you want to bring your family up. And I was a fifth round draft pick, and you know, Steve had me shook. He was like, I was thinking like, bro, I can get cut tomorrow or traded. So I was like, Brian, I really don't want you to like come up here because you got the baby. And then if I get traded or if I get cut, like we just back on our butt. And we got to move everything back to Michigan. So it's a lot of stuff that is thrown at you. And that's why so many people can't handle it. It's a lot of people that get in this league that don't have a bigger picture mindset, but then can focus on the things they need to focus on and get the stuff they need to get done. Done in a short amount of time.
Yeah. How did you keep the main thing the main thing? How did you process all of that?
Well, I kept the main thing, because main thing was always football. If I don't produce,
none of this matters.
Yeah. Nothing else matters. No, it doesn't matter if I have a car, if I'm not, you know, because I'm just going to be driving that car back to Michigan. Yeah. You know, I'm packing all my stuff back up, driving. It doesn't matter if I have a bed or not, because if I don't make some plays, I'm going to have to take that bed with me back to Michigan. And so that's what I focus on. So I focus on learning the playbook, learning the lingo. Every team has their own lingo, learning the lingo, and then making plays. And I felt like as long as I could do that, it didn't matter, you know, you know, what a veteran said or what somebody in my class said or what they did. And then that's how I became a player I am.
It was probably a huge benefit for Suggs and Doomerville not to be there, just for reps, just for you guys to keep getting out there. How quickly was there a moment of play? Was it against Stanley? Was it against somebody else where you were like, oh, I got one? And the coaching staff, you know, replayed it in the D.
It was during a preseason game. So, like, you know, during camp and during training camp, and we actually, you know, they had kind of skip over our reps, and then they had just showed the older guys reps and stuff. But during the preseason games, it's all our reps. Like,
yeah, you're going to play like the whole second half, or on that third game or the fourth game, the whole game.
Yeah. We played the fourth game against the Saints, in my rookie year, the Saints played Drew Brees, Mark Ingram. They played their whole starting line. Mike Thomas was out there, and we didn't play nobody. It was all rookies, and they played them for two drives. They only got 3 points.
Wow.
Yeah. They didn't have a whole playbook and stuff. But
do you think there was one play that really caught the coaching staff's attention?
It was my first preseason game versus the Colts. I don't know who the quarterback was, but I lit him up, and then I think it from there. I had like four or five sacks in the preseason. And then, you know, they was like, yeah, we got one.
And so
I think that's where they said, okay, this dude can actually play football. He can play in this league.
And so then, as you've made the main thing, and it's starting to click, when did you invite the girlfriend and go, I think I'm good here? Like, when did you go, okay, let's actually settle down?
Oh, it was like around the ninth game of the season, the regular season.
Jeez, wow.
Yeah.
So you're out there by yourself, just like nothing else, blinders on.
Yeah. So it was that, and then, but you know, like I was balling during the preseason. I had sack fumbles, fumble recoveries, everything. First regular season game, I got like three plays. I played like three plays, and I was like, "Bruh, how is this happening? Y'all just seen.
You know what I'm capable of."
Exactly, and I was like, "What?" And you know, I'm like, "We all in the same draft class. Ronnie's starting, and I can't get no clock."
That's that first round, man.
I can't play at all.
Yeah.
And you know, like, unfortunately, Bronson had broke his – he had got injured in camp. And then so KC was out there playing, and I'm dressed. It's not like I was in a travel suit. I'm dressed, and I'm not getting no clock at all. And all I'm doing is playing special teams. And I'm like, man, this ain't what I signed up for. I'm gonna be an all-star. I'm gonna be a pro bowler off four plays and special team. Yeah. And then Doom came back around like the third game. But you know, we went 3-0. And I was dressed for all those games. And so we went 3-0. I was dressed for all those games. Doom came back the fourth game. We lost four straight games.
Mm.
And I was like,
put me in the jersey.
Put me in, coach.
You had a really good plus minus, like NBA plus minus. Like when you dress 3-0, when you don't dress 0-4.
Exactly. So I mean, I was up 3. I don't even count those L's as my L's because I couldn't do nothing. Play.
Doesn't count.
You, right? I could have at least blocked a punt or something.
So then when did they start playing you? What was the reason?
Doom had re-aggravated something, so he had got out, and then
stay ready.
And then I caught a couple sacks. I had a sack. The Steelers was driving on us. I had a sack against them. I had missed a sack against the Browns against Joe Thomas. Mm. I had worked him over, though. Josh McCown.
The rep was on film. The result wasn't.
Exactly. No, we got the sack. Brent Urban cleaned it up.
Oh, you like flushed him over to Brent.
Yeah. Brent Urban cleaned him up. And then I think I had got another sack against the Dolphins and then something else, another one. But I was out there winning reps, like in an actual game, winning rushes. So then they had to like kind of start playing me a little more.
Were you like, because since you had like 9 weeks of pent up, like, come on, man. When it started happening, I don't know you. Like, I don't know if you're a shit talker. I don't know if you were humble with it. Were you like, hey, thanks for the opportunity? Or you were like, it's about fucking time.
Oh, and I don't really even like talk to our coaches and stuff like that, just because, you know, that might be problematic. But I was talking shit to the other teams. I know people don't like playing against me. I know it.
Are you a deep research trash talker, or are you just letting them know you can't guard me and you're screwed every time I'm out here?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm just saying, like, hey, bro, this is not even for you. Like,
should quit.
Yeah, like, hey, man, like, especially versus tight ends, because tight ends got a block and stuff, but they love doing like the chip block and all that. They love the motion and doing all that weak shit. But when they got lined up head to head, oh, man, punish them.
It's one of the most confusing. There's a few things that I'm always confused with by the NFL. Why don't you put wide receivers in motion every play just to see what kind of defense that you're going against? But my main one, number two, running backs deserve their own salary cap because it's ridiculous. Like, they just get treated like shit. And then my third one is, why would you ever block somebody like Matt Judon straight up with a tight end? Unless it's Kelce or Kittle, and even then that's not really fair, why? Like, just because you drew a little line on the board doesn't mean it's going to work. It's not going to work.
But that's what offense would – it's scheme. It's they be like, okay, this is how we can scheme it up, and this is how we can get – so – it'd be easier if you just can block the offensive, the defensive end with a tight end, and then you can double team
everybody else.
You can double team everybody else, and then so you can always double team a guy like Aaron Donald. But then that end better go to work. That end better have to have
some. Yeah, exactly. Robert Quinn got to go to work.
That's what I'm saying.
Was there ever an opposing player or coach early on that was like, I see you on film? Like, did you ever get that compliment from the opposition?
Well, yeah. So during the draft process, I had like 20 visits with teams. Jeez. And so like every time we would go then play those teams and check them off, the people I actually talked to them before the game and stuff, and they'd get my compliments and stuff. And I'd be like, man, you should have drafted me early. Like, you know, and then 2 years ago, we went to Philly. And then I was talking with their defensive line coach and their defensive coordinator. And I was like, bro, we wanted you. But this would hurt the most. It was like, man, we wanted to draft you in a second round, but our trainer said your body wouldn't hold up. I was like, wow. I know. I was like, bro, you know, I was like, I haven't missed a game in the NFL due to injury. And so
isn't that wild? Isn't it wild that something that, you know, because they want to poke and prod and they want to like find it. And then that's like some Drew Brees, Miami Dolphins shit where like he goes down there and they're like, we don't think the shoulder's going to hold up. Let's sign Dante Culpepper. And it's like, You need to fire that doctor.
You need to fire him. Gotta fire him.
He needs to go.
Gotta fire him. He lost you money.
You know what's fucked up? I looked it up. Eagles didn't even have a second round pick in that draft. They traded him to go up and get Carson Wentz. Bunch of liars.
Damn. Well, wait, they traded, didn't they?
Because they had to give up a lot of picks because they were like in the middle of the round and they went up to go get Carson Wentz. And then they drafted Isaac Samelo in the third round, who you've probably lit up.
Who is that?
He's still there, left guard. He's got one of those offensive linemen with like the big puffy. I think he's like
or something. The Eagles have like one of the most massive offensive line.
So I am an Eagles fan, so that's why I know about them a lot. But it's part of the reason why. So the Eagles let up the most sacks in the NFL last year. They let up 65. Second worst was 50. So that's how bad it was.
Yeah. Well, I didn't say it was good, but there.
Brandon Brooks was out. He missed the whole season. The left tackle they took in the first round, Andre Dillard, he was out. Lane Johnson missed six games. It's like one of those things where people forget about injuries in the offseason. And they just forget. They just assume that everybody was there. And it's like, no, listen, guys, like the Ravens offensive line was missing Ronnie Stanley for half the year. And as soon as that happened, it changes the entire team.
It's harder when an interior guy goes down, you know, but when a guy
I've never heard that.
Huh?
I've never heard that before. I always thought the left tackle was the most important position.
Well, so you can almost kind of put anybody at right tackle and hopefully it held up and might make your right tackle go to left tackle and hope he hold up.
Orlando Brown, yeah.
Exactly. But then when you take like the center out.
Yeah, because you guys lost Skura, right?
We lost Skura last year.
Oh yeah.
But if you take a center or a guard out and try to make them, because they've been hearing the lingo for so long, and so like you know right zone, they've been hearing right zone, and now they at the left tackle. Mm-hmm. I mean left guard. It just switched stuff up, and then you don't ever want to mess up the quarterback exchange. Like, you want the quarterback to get the ball all the time. So, when your center go down, and you got to throw in a new center. That's why you rep all of it during practice and stuff. You rep all that stuff. But when that pressure on, it's nothing like that pressure.
Mm. So, how validating was the Pro Bowl nods to have the journey where it was like, man, I know what I got. I don't get the recognition. To make a team that says you're a top four player at your position, what was that like to get? Because I saw on your Instagram, you know, it came in the mail. That was last year, but like the first Pro Bowl, what was that like?
So it was nothing like that because I understand, you know, the fans don't really understand what I do, I don't get that kind of love, but knowing that the opposing coaches and opposing players that I play understand what I meant to a team, and especially to our team, and we was one of the best defense in the league at the time, and what we was doing, and the problems that people was having blocking us. And so just to get that recognition meant like the world, you know. I played a game, you know, to be the best. And, you know, it's unfortunate that I don't get to rush as many times as I want, but we cause so much trouble and so much havoc just by moving around and dropping it in different positions that, you know, that meant the world. And when I got the call, when I got the news, I was so happy. I was so happy. And like, you know, I was calling everybody I knew to tell them, and I won't, you know, because we kind of get the news before it gets put out. Yeah. But I didn't want like my close family and friends to find out, you know, through Twitter or Instagram and stuff. So I was calling everybody and I was telling them to be quiet. But I had that moment to just like, you know, like, damn, like this is what you play the game for.
You're like almost like one of those MCs where it's like, I'm your artist's favorite artist. Like I'm deep in the game and the real ones know, and I'm not here buying streams. Like exactly. I'm real. Like that's exactly. What it sounds like.
Exactly. So like, you know, when it's tough to get that recognition unless like, especially because, you know, I didn't come in with like 40,000 followers already from my college that,
no way.
You know, the stadium seat almost 75,000 players. Like, you know, it was probably like 13,000 max at Lover Stadium.
Wow.
And so, man, just to know that the my peers and the coaches understand what I mean to a team, man, that's all the love I need.
When you guys had some battles with the Patriots, and that's one of the things that I always loved about the Ravens was that there was no fear. You know, a lot of teams had fear. The Ravens never had fear. Did Belichick ever say anything to you after a game?
I don't know. He said nothing to the coach. I don't.
No, he said anything to you?
No, he ain't never say nothing to me. I'm saying he don't say much, so I don't even know if he talked to Harbaugh after the game. Right, that's right. That's how quick he be off the field. And so, you know, and I don't think he would ever say anything to like a player or nothing like that. But it was, you know, you see on the wire one time, and he was talking to Chad and he was just like, shut the F up and play the game. And I just feel like that's the type of person he is.
That was so good. That was so good.
Yeah.
And then, so what was the free agent process for you? Like, you're a free agent, which is like, and you're coming off like a Pro Bowl season, and now you got good stuff on tape. You're getting recognition. Did you kind of go to your agent and said, I want to be wooed? You know, I haven't had, like, how did you approach it?
I just told him I wanted to be in a good situation. I didn't want to go to a team and just lose games, especially because that's not where I was coming from. And then I told him, like, you know, I love to be back with the Ravens. You know, it is behind closed doors and stuff. I told him I'd love to be back with the Ravens if it could be possible. And so, but we couldn't make that happen. And so, you know, then I became a free agent, and then, it was like, all right, like, just let's see the best deals, best offers, and best places to win games. And, you know, winning games turns to, you know, winning conference championships and playoff games to Super Bowls. And so I want to compete for a Super Bowl. And, you know, I want that stress. I want that pressure. And, you know, I want that celebration. And so
And those bonus checks that come with that too.
When you hit your second deal, most of the times you're gonna be rich enough to, you know, do whatever you want for the rest of your life. And so money wasn't never the play. I wanted the most money I could get. I'm not gonna lie, but money was never the play. It wasn't never like. It wasn't like I needed money. I just came off, you know, making 16.8 for the franchise tag.
Right.
And so,
right.
Yeah. So I got franchise tag. So now it's like, all right, let's try to win a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got money. I can say I won a Super Bowl. I've been in two Pro Bowls, and, you know, it's just accomplishments I want to have.
Did you come up with a list, or were you like, let's see who shows interest and then I'll pick the winningest opportunity of that?
It was I could have picked the whole NFL, honestly. I could have.
Really? That's dope. What a good feeling that is. I'm drafting you now, motherfucker.
Yeah. So but then if they don't got the cap or they don't got the money, or, you know, I could have said I wanted to go to the Bucks, but they already had PP. Yeah. It wouldn't have made sense. So yeah. All right, let's pick a spot that makes sense for me, that I can come in there and play. I can come in there and make an impact, and that, you know, we can win a Super Bowl. And I felt like the Patriots, out of the teams that called me that day, the Patriots was the best team. And it just turns out they had the best offer. It wasn't that they was the best offer and that's what I went with. It just turns out that they had money that they was willing to spend and that they wisely spent on a lot of players that day.
I mean, I know that I was shocked because that's not something Bill normally does, but the free agent class that you're joining, defensively, you, Montrevious Adams, Devon Godshaw, Henry Anderson from the Jets, Kyle Van Noy comes back, Raekwon McMillan from the Raiders. You get Jalen Mills from the Eagles. Offensively, the two top tight ends in the free agency market, Hunter Henry, Jonnu Smith. You get an offensive lineman, Trent Brown comes back. Now, it was a whirlwind that we had never seen before. To be one of the premier names on that and to look around and go, oh, they're making a run right now. What was it like to experience all of that?
Just knowing that franchise, you know what they knew what they needed to do. Mm. They knew what they was lacking. They looked at all their games and they said, this is how we're gonna make a change. And then they made that.
Yeah.
They made that. They made that in free agency.
And people forget, too, like, they had a lot of opt-outs, like Dante Hightower. And now they're coming. That's like free agents as well.
Yeah. So they did it. They did that in a draft. They did that in free agency. And, you know, we gonna see how it turns out. You know, you can't win a Super Bowl on paper. Mm-mm. We got all gel. We got to all mix well with each other. And then I just need to go in there and do my job. And then as simple as that, if I do my job and the other 10 players on the team do their job, or on the field, excuse me, do their job, and we let the special teams do their job and we let the offense do their job, we can win a lot of games. But if we all not prepared and we all not on one accord, you know, we can go in there and lose to anybody.
How did you go from, man, I really hate the Patriots, to, oh shit, I'm on the Patriots now? Because you only knew one team beforehand.
Exactly. You know, it's the type thing. Like, you know, I'm always have love for them players in the locker room and for the Ravens, and I still talk to those people. You know, like, I've actually still kind of work out with them still,
right?
And, you know, and no love will ever be lost there. But we all understand the business. Mm-hmm. We all understand, you know, you're not going to be on the same team forever. And so between and those 60 minutes of football, it's fucking. But after that, like, they my dogs. I'm never going to, you know, say nothing bad about none of them, because those are the memories that we had. Those are the times we shared in that locker room and growing close with one another. But then at this point, it's like, you know, now I'm making new relationships and building, you know, new friendships.
Yeah, has it started already?
Yeah, I'm back. I was back in the game. You know, I was a bachelor, you know, now I got picked up by the, you know, girl next door. So it's not like I gotta be like, oh, now I gotta love the Patriots and fall in love with the day tradition. But, you know, that's who I work for now.
Yeah.
And that's who I'm gonna go to bat for. if you say something bad about the Patriots, you're saying something bad about me. And so, you know, that's just my mental on that, and that's how I'm gonna go about it.
Any Bill conversations yet? Have you got to talk to the big man?
I talked to him for a little bit when I went up there and signed. Yeah. Just because of the COVID stuff, I'm still back in Maryland right now, and so my daughter's about to finish out school up here. Then we gonna pack everything up and we gonna move up there. And then I'm pretty sure we're gonna have a lot more conversation.
Pretty dope to think about the journey and how before you told your family, don't move here because we don't know yet. And now it's like, let's let my daughter finish school and we're all going and we're not worried about it at all. I mean, that's a pretty cool experience, man.
Exactly. It was the one thing I really look back at and be like, man, it my life has changed so much. It's when I have to move. When I have to move, I don't pack nothing. I don't touch nothing. I'm not doing nothing. I'm just gonna meet y'all at the other house. So that's how I know that my life has changed so much. Because
before you were going to Home Depot, getting the boxes and the
man, getting the boxes, my back hurt for 2 days afterwards because I got to carry all the heavy stuff. And it's not like we got the dollies or nothing or the smart straps and stuff.
You just
got
to call big friends.
And yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's me and my four friends, and we moving everything, scratching walls and stuff. We don't got the little mats to put down. Or
worst part about moving is when you've been doing it for a while and you think you're done and you get to the drawers that have like random shit in it and you're just like, fuck these pencils, I'm throwing them away.
I'm telling you, when you get to moving, you'd be like, man, do I really need it?
Yeah,
I don't even need this. It ain't.
I start throwing away like gifts. I'm like, I don't need this.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, man, nobody even sit in this chair, man. Just leave that shit here. We'll leave it for the next family. And I think a lot of people start to do that. They like, yeah, we'll sell you the furniture too. Like, man, get your furniture up out this house.
We do not need we don't need that bureau. Do you ever have a moment now, Patriots have their draft, bringing in some young players, where you get tempted to do the Steve Smith speech where they come in and you're like, you know what, let me make this a tradition. Let me tell these young kids how they are in trouble already. Or what's your mindset now with the rookies?
I do it differently. I bring everybody along, and I don't care if you're an undrafted free agent or if you a first round pick. Like, if you want to work, I can get you some workouts. I can get you a suits. I can get you this. I can get you that. I've been in this game for a little bit. Let me teach you how to maneuver around this game.
Yeah.
These are some do's. These are some don'ts. But at the end of the day, everything is what you want to do and what you want to make of it.
Any don'ts that like random ass people like me would be surprised by?
Any don'ts that not like bringing yourself on to the meeting is like one of the worst things you can do.
Interesting. I've never heard that.
Man, it's one of the worst things you can do because
nothing good can come from it.
Because you honestly, like, you have so many alerts on your phone, you don't know if everything's silent. And even when your phone on silent, you still get some random ass noises. And so I just think don't bring up. And then we are addicted to our phones and electronics. So like you will be in there, you'd be like, damn, what Shorty say? And you'd be in a whole meeting and then you'd be under the desk like, and then you might not get caught. But if you do, Dennis.
What was the worst timed notification cell phone ring that you witnessed in a meeting? Like, was there a coach that was like, I'm tired, I'm fed up, and then it's like, and you're like, oh my
God. Coach Rosberg okay. was our special teams coach.
And they always are fired up, special teams
coach. And man, I'm telling you, it was one time somebody had, he hated eating in a meeting. He hated eating in a meeting. It was one time somebody was coming in. You know, his meeting started at like 7:15. He coming in with a little piece of sandwich about to finish it. Bro, he got chewed out so bad. And I'm like, it ain't even that serious. It's not even
7:20. And we're yelling at the last bite of a sandwich.
It's early in the morning. But Coach Rosberg used to get there heck of early. He used to go out and he'll watch like the sunrise and stuff. And he just be like, because hey, he be like, man, we're just so blessed. And we're just to be in it. But he a dog cuss you out.
He'll dog cuss you out.
And then he be like, man, I love you, God. I be like, man, hey, man, something wrong with it.
The more stories I hear about coaches, it's like a combination between like a drill sergeant and a bouncer at a club, where you're like, you don't need to be acting like this. You don't need to turn into major pain, like at the drop of a hat. It's unnecessary.
Yeah, man. But that's how they all grew up, though. Mm. That's how they all grew up. Like, think about it. Like, who is the young? Before the coaches that's like now 30 in the league, I think the youngest coach is Mike Tomlin.
And he ain't even, dude, he's older than you think. He just looks young. Because we know why.
But like before the Kingsbury.
He's got swag.
Yeah.
Oh, Tomlin's 49. He's actually younger than I thought he was.
That's what I'm saying. I think he's the youngest of the oldest coaches.
All right, let's see. All right, youngest NFL coaches. McVay's the youngest, 34.
Yeah.
Zach Taylor of the Bengals is next at 37.
Right.
Kevin Stefanski and Arthur Smith, who's now the coach of the Falcons, are both 38. Arthur Smith looks older than 38. That dude looks weathered. He looks like me, which is not a good thing. Flores is 39. That's my guy. I love Brian Flores.
Brian Flores for the Jets?
For the Dolphins.
Dolphins, okay. Yeah.
How old is Belichick? What's your guess?
Belichick, 58.
All right.
61, 58, 61.
Hold on. I typed in oldest because I definitely. Okay. So Belichick, you said he was how old?
58.
That man is 69.
He's 69?
Nice. 69. He's the second oldest coach in the NFL.
Who the oldest?
Pete Carroll.
Oh, yeah.
That man apparently will be 71 in September. Yeah, that's crazy.
Pete Carroll gonna live forever, all that damn gum he chewing.
Yeah, what do you think he's got in that gum that's keeping him young?
Man, he'd be happy as hell, too. I mean, not during games, but after the game and stuff, happy.
You know how old John Harbaugh is? He's the 9th oldest coach in the NFL. You got a guess on his age?
Harbaugh, like 56, ain't he?
59. Well, he'll be 59 in September.
59. Shit. This dude's old as hell.
Bill is old. Bill
60. But that's what I'm saying. That's what they grew up off of. They like military babies.
Oh, he was like the only thing Bill Belichick loves more than football is the Naval Academy. Like, that is his shit.
Yeah, I'm straight. And then that's how they run it. But then, you know, like the oldest dude in the league, or like non-punter and stuff, You know, like they'd be like 34, 35.
Well, other than Brady, but Brady's like, Brady acts like he feels like 28. Like just the coolness. You disagree?
Nah. I mean, yeah, true. Besides when he threw that BF about the numbers.
Oh yeah, you didn't like. Yeah, he really didn't like.
I mean, that's because
number changing.
Yeah, because he's so old. Mm-hmm. I feel like old people didn't like that.
Old people don't like change in general.
Exactly. So he like, well, I knew that all the safeties had to be between this number and this number, and all the linebackers had to be between this number and this number. So now I'm gonna have no clue when they bring dime or nickel or switch up personnel.
Yeah, he wants to be able to process it.
Exactly. He wanted to process immediately. They taking 48 out and putting 31 in.
Okay, so they're doing a linebacker for a safety.
Yep. So that, I think that's what, like, he
do you think defensive players like this more than offensive players?
Yeah, because defense players don't care. You're either a tight end, running back, wide receiver. You still can get the ball. Get your head
right. Yeah. But defense now you guys can mix it up and mess up these dudes.
Exactly. Like you.
Could you have changed your number?
Would I?
What is your number going to be?
Man, it's going to be number 9.
Number 9. Oh, yeah. My God. How excited are you for a single digit?
Back to the college day.
Dude, like, so this is something that I'll never know. What is, in your mind, the meaning of a jersey number? Like, why is it so important to you guys?
I don't know, honestly.
Does it give you superpowers when you look at it? Because, like, you were very excited that you're going to number 9.
No, I think, you fall in love with a number.
So you were 99 in Baltimore, and now you're going to chop one off and go to 9. So you always love the number 9.
Yeah, I've always been the 9, baby. Turn the 6 upside down, there's a 9 now. Let's go. On my drizzy.
So wait, why? What about 9 have you always loved?
I don't know. I got 9 brothers and sisters. I got like little dice on my chest. They both equal 9. It's over here.
Wow.
I don't know. I just always like 9 as a number. It was 9, 15, and 34.
I was trying to like see if like 15 plus 34 equals 9, and it doesn't. It is the number of completion. Okay. So rocking at number 9. Oh, it's going to piss Brady off when he has to, because you guys are facing the Bucs this year.
That's what I'm saying. He not going to know. I'm going to line up at safety. he ain't going to have no clue.
He'll be like, damn, that's the biggest safety I've ever seen in my life. Oh, that's awesome. Matthew Judon, pleasure talking to you. Anything else that you want to get off your chest right now before we go? Anything that's been interesting you outside the lines, even?
Outside the lines? All right. If you know Lil Wayne, tell him I'm looking to have a sit down with him.
Interesting. What would be your big question for Lil Wayne?
The big question? I've got no questions. I just want to meet Lil Wayne.
What would you talk to him about? What would you want to tell him?
Shit, I don't have no clue. Probably his music. I mean, that's my favorite artist of all time.
So and Kyle Shanahan, big fans of Lil Wayne.
Yeah. So
Lil Wayne, you know what? Like, because when Shaq and I talk about rap, he always gives his top 5 and he always puts Lil Wayne in there. I know that you're like, you were born in Louisiana too, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a little bit of connection there. If I were to meet Lil Wayne, I would just want to see the speed of his brain, because there are very few rappers that I think have true world defining talent. Like, we've heard the stories of Jay-Z. He doesn't write it down. He goes in the booth. You see interviews with like Timbaland and he's like, it's magic. What happens? Lil Wayne is like that too, where you're like, how do you know all these words? How do you string it together? And he just like kind of skips. I would just, I wouldn't want to be like rap for me because that's ridiculous. But I would want to be like, I would start just to get him going. You know what I mean? Just to see the brain.
Yeah. So, I mean, besides that, I'm trying to get into the music game. Like, dang, I need it. And talent? It's not even like I have any musical talent. That's the problem. I have no musical talent at all.
You just want to be in the recording studio when it's going down.
Bro, I can't put words together that sound well.
Can you play like a triangle? You got any like instrument talent?
Probably not well.
You just love music. Yeah.
Bro, I love music. And so that, and then, you know, I'm trying to get my little karaoke night off the ground. So if I can do like a worldwide karaoke tour, if you can hook that up for me.
Well, okay. There's the famous Randy Moss clip when he goes into Bill Belichick's office and he invites him to the Halloween party. And then it's at like the roller skating rink. And he goes, you know, if you set up, you know, Matthew Judon karaoke and you were able to get him going. My big question when you tell me you love karaoke is what's your go-to? What's the one that you're like, it's over after I perform this?
Oh, shoot. Any Adele song.
Mine is What's Love by Fat Joe, Ja Rule, and Ashanti. That's my, I'll do. And then, yeah, then you get to call up your Ashanti. Who wants to be Ashanti?
Right. But Adele, got to do.
Yeah. What's love? Yeah. You got to hit a little.
It should be about us. It should be about trusting.
Oh, you know, you got issues. You got to understand that he really, yeah. Oh yeah.
Hey, you can see. If you allow yourself to have enough fun, karaoke night is what, like, bro, you're going to suck, all right?
Yeah.
This is exactly why you don't make millions of dollars just saying.
I got to do a Ja Rule song in front of Ja Rule, and I didn't know it was happening.
For real.
So before the Super Bowl in Miami, so Kansas City, San Francisco, D Wade was having a karaoke party and me and him just got on a show together and me and Taylor Rooks did Ja Rule and J-Lo. And we thought it was going to be in the cut. We thought it was like a lounge where there was going to be, I walk in, there's Venus Williams, there's CC Sabathia. There's stars.
Yeah.
And they go, and it was raining. And they were like, okay, so like the stage is getting ready. And I was like, stage? There's 1,000 people outside. Quavo walks by me. And I was like, what the fuck? We go up there. Gary Vee is judging. Tiana Taylor is judging. And I'm going after like Carrie Champion. I was like, what's going on right now? And the lady comes up to me and she goes, you know that Ja Rule is here. And I was like, oh, this is my dream. And so I go out there and I'm like, everybody, put your hands up. It's Ja Rule and J-Lo. And dude, I had the best time ever. Ja Rule DM'd me the next day and he's like, you fucking killed it. I was like, what is going on? But it was all because of karaoke. And there's a moment right before karaoke where you need to decide, am I going to be cool or am I going to give it my all? And if you give it your all, it's always a fun night.
You always got to give it your all. A great song to sing, but you need like a girl to help you out. It's Rihanna. What the freak is that song?
First thing that came to mind was Umbrella, but
no, it's Stay. Rihanna, Stay.
Okay,
that's a great song because it's not many words.
To host karaoke? Like, do you like to set it all up and all that?
I mean, you know, I'm the host. I'm not setting nothing up, but I'm the host. And I get up there on a mic and I'm starting it out.
So you like ballads.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I got you. So Adele Stay, like I was thinking more. Okay.
It depends the type of audience though. So you can always.
Yeah, you got to.
I feel like karaoke, you got to have more like singing songs, But you can go like Drew Hill, Casey JoJo.
Oh yeah,
like you can do some stuff in some, you know. Or you
this
can.
This is my other one my other karaoke song. You might not know it. If I'm in like West Virginia and they might not know Ja Rule, that's when I go Sister Hazel All For You. That's my white people karaoke song.
You can do the Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga though.
That's true. I don't know if I can hit those pipes, but we're gonna try.
Just do the Bradley Cooper joints.
Okay, so I think like a Boston karaoke night led by Matthew Judon. You know, as long as you get Cam there, it'll get attention because that dude is like a magnet.
I'm gonna have to get on it.
Well, listen, if you need someone help put it together, I'm available. I would love to. I'll fly in. I'll host it. We'll make it a real event. We'll co-host. We'll have to do some duets.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta pop up. I just gotta pop off the first song.
Yeah.
But then, you know, it might be a Bruno. I always go Bruno Mars the first song.
Which Bruno Mars song?
Huh?
Which one?
All of them. It doesn't matter. Bruno Mars has to start it up.
I've never given this take publicly, but I will give it now. There is one song that I believe is karaoke steroids, that it is unfair that whoever is performing, they don't even need to sing. It goes well. And when you choose it, I actually think less of you because I think you're taking a cop out. And it is this. Gotta wait for it. See the reaction you're having right now? It's steroids. It's not real.
Right.
You don't need to sing. It hits and everybody looks at each other and goes, oh, great song.
Hey, right. It takes you back to the time when you first heard, na, 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 na.
Yeah, the whole, so I will say that it's a great song to, it's D Wade's karaoke song. That's what he goes. And I tell him all the time, I go, this is cheating.
Yeah.
Like no one's listening to you. But it's a good
thing. Everybody know the words to it. Everybody know the words and they not listen to you. This is how we, and
you gotta do is bob on beat and you're going.
Right. You can put the mic out to the crowd.
Yes.
Nah, 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 nah.
He's such an entertainer. No, it's cheating. Montel Jordan, this is how we do it, is cheating. And I just want to get that on the record. Man, calling you out, Dwayne Wade. You're cheating.
Throw some Afro Man in there.
Oh, because I got high? That's a good one.
Yeah. Hey. Karaoke, Boston karaoke night. Let's
Boston karaoke coming at you soon. Matthew Judon, proof to everybody out there that just because you have doubters, use it as fuel. Because one day they're going to be handing you multiple Pro Bowls, a big old contract, and the keys to the city. Beautiful. My man, great talking to you, dude.
Thank you.
And I do want an invitation to the karaoke. That is not a joke.
I mean, you're going to be co-host, so.
Okay. I'm going to DM you on IG, so we'll talk it out.
All right,
brother. Have a good one, man.
All right, you too. Appreciate you.
Another lovely interview with a now Patriot. He's rocking the 9. He thinks that Tom Brady is old, but I love his story. And anytime that I can give out karaoke takes, I love it. So that was Matthew Judon for David Ingber.
When you're picking a karaoke song, it's not about the song, it's about the era. You got to read the room, figure out the ages, figure out the nostalgia, figure out what people are going to hit with. That's what you got to be thinking about.
And also, don't play Pour Some Sugar on Me. Nobody likes it anymore. It's past its prime. It's moved on. Ja Rule, for Ja Rule.
Hey, thanks, Adam.
You're welcome. For J-Lo, for Matthew Judon, for everybody making this possible. Love you. L-E-F-K-O-E. Be well. Holla, holla, holla.